to Papaholics, show about hot takes on the hot, tasty pancakes. Well, we're coming with you action, balls to ball. We're talking about the Earth if the sky falls.
Virtual balls to balls.
Virtual balls to balls, virtual sky balls, sky falls balls, walls and walls. Let it stand out and face it all, let the sky fall. I'm your host, Christian Cady, and this is the Papaholics. What the fuck's going on? Who knows? I'm joined by my two second and third best friends.
Chris Conkling.
And Brian Dupree. Quick upgrade from Wednesday, from Monday.
I told you. It happens.
Reverse order. So you figure that one out. What are we talking about? Well, of course, hey, it's James Bond month. A little
Has anyone in this family ever seen a Bond movie?
We're technically not allowed to hum.
Brian, you're back. So happy to have you. Welcome back to the chaos.
Oh, so
Brian
happy
just
to be back.
Left.
It's been fun, again. But yeah, that's about enough of that.
Yeah, let's cut out the wackiness. Only serious talks here. What is Skyfall saying about child labor exploitation, Brian?
Surprisingly, something.
possibly. So what do we do on the show? Well, we talk about all things pop culture. We theme our months. This is the main topic episode, and it is no time to pod, my friends. And we are talking all James Bond, Daniel Craig, specifically the Daniel Craig run, having a good retrospective on that. So up until, some of us have seen No Time to Die. Brian, little Chinese theater action. You suave dog, you. You devil, you. So if you want to listen to our thoughts, me and Chris, solo pod, our thoughts on Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace. So you can go listen to those. But this week, we're talking about the next film in the series. But before we do that, Brian, you missed out last week. Me and Chris shared our history with Bond. And, you know, Bond is very, it's very special for my relationship with you. So I'm very excited to hear. I didn't share it as much because I didn't want to get lonely without you, but share some of your history with the Bond films.
No, yeah, as you kind of talked about, Bonds are kind of definitionally dad movies on some level. So Roger Moore was my dad's Bond, so those are the ones that I largely grew up on. We specifically had VHS copies of both Live and Let Die and Octopussy, which obviously as a child I did not know how intensely sexual this stuff was, how explicit it was. But yeah, Moonraker as well, A View to a Kill. Surprisingly, I think I saw The Man with the Golden Gun a little later in my life. But yeah, very much grew up on the Roger Moore Bonds. So even when Pierce Brosnan took over, I did see all of those movies. But not until Daniel Craig did I really feel like that was my Bond. Kind of fit the tone of our generation and resonated with me a little more in terms of what the movies were going for. But yeah, as you guys talked about, GoldenEye, I never owned it, but it was the ubiquitous party game for many years growing up, and just a classic that I look back on with fond nostalgia for. So yeah, always kind of been a Bond fan from the beginning, and over time have obviously come to terms with the problems inherent within what these movies are. And I'm excited to dig into some of that. I think it's directly addressed, for better and for worse, in Skyfall. So interested to dive into this one.
And we are interested to do that. I do want to hear, like, you weren't here in the last episode, and I know this episode is titled Skyfall, but I do want to hear a quick opinion on Casino Royale and Quantum, because you did revisit those films as well, right?
I did, yep, and I listened to you guys' great episodes on those, so listeners, definitely go check that out if you haven't. I think we're pretty much in agreement. I didn't realize that Quantum of Solace happened during the writer's strike, and I think having rewatched it, it definitely shows. Casino Royale is an incredible Bond movie. I rewatched it with my family for movie night the week that we covered it, and it kind of stands alone as this brilliant piece of art that really brings new energy to this historic franchise. Quantum afterwards, I hadn't rewatched it since I loved Casino Royale. I think it holds up incredibly well. debatably my favorite of the five, but we'll get into the rankings later. It's up there. It's close. But Quantum, coming back to it after having not seen it since theaters, I think it actually gets a little more shit than it deserves. I thought there was a lot of solid action stuff that happened, and thematically, even though the writing is not there, they're trying to say something, and I appreciate what the villain is and I without getting into any spoilers, I think there's something that's trying to be said that is interesting in that one. I would say probably in the same boat, thinking Casino Royale is one of the best Bond movies, whereas Quantum is an okay Bond movie, very much middle of the road. The writing is just, especially coming into Skyfall, it really stands apart as having not as great of writing, which is a big part of what makes Bond fun, is the language and the witty dialogue.
It's really the polish, right? It seems to be the, especially out of these three, and we'll get into it a little more, it's definitely the most unpolished of the Craig Bonds from what I'm experiencing rewatching them. But still fun. I think funner than I gave it credit for. It definitely deserves kind of the runt of the litter as far as what we've covered so far. But I still think a solid action movie overall. I think better than average. But for coming off Casino Royale, it's hard to compare.
It's such a, such a high bar that it had to reach, like I said last week. But I agree with you guys. It was fun. I would revisit it again.
But it's interesting coming across, and we'll transition into our Skyfall retrospective. But, you know, you mentioned the Roger Moore Bond, and I didn't talk a lot about it last week because that was really the me, Brian, and Brian's dad Bond. Because
seriously,
that we watched it all the time. Me and you watched Live and Let Die and Octopussy. Like, it feels like, from my recollection, like once a month. Like, both of those movies we watched all the time.
And I haven't come back to Octopussy. I feel like every beat of Live and Let Die is just ingrained in my memory. I'm sure it's the same with Octopussy, but I haven't come back to it. So we should do a revisit sometime soon.
I know, and I haven't seen it in a while, and all I can remember by my recollection is, like, really bad racial stereotyping and voodooism and all that.
Maybe,
like, isn't there a lot?
That might be Live and Let Die as well, because there's
maybe
some...
we should Live and Let Die is a Popaholic's commentary track for one of the Bond movies. That could be
it. Would be insane to live commentary a film we haven't seen in forever that I know me and you've watched hundreds of times, because we definitely have seen a lot. But that's definitely coming off the goofiness, and I think Pierce Brosnan carried forth a lot of that goofiness too. And there's just kind of this goofy, you know, what's that one series? They revisited it, but this, like, you know, goofy spy shit. That really
Get Smart, is that what you're thinking of?
Get Smart, like this, definitely like this breeding of Get Smart, and that was definitely pervasive throughout the Roger Moore and Pierce Brosnan era, and then just have it turned around with Daniel Craig and revisiting these films, it's a ton of fun. So let's delay no further. We're already several minutes into our Skyfall retrospective and have not talked about it, so let us roll the trailer for Skyfall.
It's gone.
You both know what's at stake here.
There isn't much road left.
Take the bloody shot.
What do you say about a man like that?
3 months ago, you lost the drive containing the identity of every agent embedded in terrorist organizations across the globe.
007 reporting for duty.
Where the hell have you been?
Enjoying death.
I only have one question.
Why not stay dead? There's no shame in saying you've lost a step.
They weren't targeting her. They wanted her to see it.
Welcome to the new MI6.
I'm your quartermaster.
You must be joking.
Also, PPKS 9mm short. It's been coded to your palm print, so only you can fire it. Less of a random killing machine, more of a personal statement.
Q.
007.
I want to meet your employer.
That is from the trailer of Skyfall! You can't not sing the song. This is just so catchy. It's directed by Sam Mendes, written by Neil Purvis.
Sir
Robert Wade.
Sam Mendes.
Say.
Academy Sir Award Sam. Winning Sam Mendes.
Sorry, that wasn't on the paper. I read whatever's on the sheet, Chris.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Written by Neil Purvis, Robert Wade, and John Logan. score by Thomas Newman, the budget $150 to $200 million. It grossed $1.109 billion. And it stars Daniel Craig, Judi Dench, the Dame Judi Dench, not on the page, off the dome, Javier Bardem, Ralph Fiennes, Naomi Harris, Bernice Marlowe, Albert Finney, Ben Whishaw, and many more. And what are we going to be talking about? Well, we got to cover this opening theme. Because as is per the Bond usual, and stack it up against the Bond history, we're going to compare Skyfall by Adele to the two previous films. Then we're going to move on into our non-spoiler thoughts, spoiler talk, some of our favorite moments, and with some final thoughts. Let's get into it. Skyfall by Adele. Come on, is this not the top song from the Bond era? What are your thoughts? Chris, let's start with you.
I love this opening. Christian and I kind of spoiled our thoughts last week. We already said that this is our favorite Bond song.
Whoopsies.
Out of the Craig era. But it's well-deserved. As I mentioned in our group chat, this is the only Bond song to have ever won an Academy Award for Best Original Song the year that this movie came out. So it is absolutely deserving of all the praise that we give this. In terms of the opening itself, I absolutely love the way it transitions from that beginning action sequence into the opening. It has such cool visuals. I'm trying to be vague about what happens in the beginning of the movie, only because we're not in spoiler territory. But yeah, this is my favorite Bond opening out of the Craig era. It's just so good. And Adele has a beautiful voice. When this came out, I was actually kind of in a Adele mood. So it elevated the opening that much more for me. But yeah, I love Skyfall.
Yeah, I think I often forget with such a powerful song that the visuals are very simple but very impactful. Like, it's a little less flashy than the last two. Like, that really goes for minimalism. And I think it works really well, especially because the song is actually super sparse to its credit. It gets big and bombastic, and obviously Adele just starts belting. But it's very centrally focused on Adele's voice, which I think is really nice.
There's Brian. A great death motif to the opening sequence. There's some really cool shadow work being done. Mm-hmm. It's just a really interesting Bond opening.
Absolutely. Brian.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat here. So I think working off your point, Christian, about the kind of simple nature of the song, I think when these songs are at their best is when they're at their least explicit. So this song feels thematically very strong, and with the visuals, it really walks you through the major parts of the plot without giving anything away. Mm. And yeah, the strings at the end, it gets huge, but the subtle nature of the song, the fact that it could stand alone and not be about Bond is incredible. It's like, this is, I re-listened to all three of these songs before we recorded and got literal chills without even the visuals from having listened to this song. So it's just emotionally provoking and powerful. If I had to compare it to the first two, I think I would say Skyfall is the top, and then You Know My Name would be second, and
yes,
Another Way to Die for number three.
Ryan, I'm so happy
die,
you're back.
It's
I'm
just,
so glad that you've come back to us.
The back and forth is not working for me. The styles, it gets...
Oh, it's a mess.
It has some good moments. The way they incorporate the theme, the Bond theme, mm-hmm. into it is cool. But just in terms of how explicit it is and the tonal nature of it, coming back to You Know My Name with Casino Royale, I thought it was stronger at this point in my life, at least.
Okay. Yeah, I like how all three of the films, to compare them with their similarities, Adele has a very, like, the Skyfall is a very nice incorporation of the Bond theme. It's very, like,
it
subtle and soft, but it's very impactful. Yeah, it's a banger. It's a good track. We all love it. Adele's an amazing artist. And this song just stands tall. Can I just say that? It just stands.
Amen.
I mean, it's really beautiful in its simplicity. Like, it might be the most straightforward. I have not heard Billie Eilish's No Time to Die, but I'm excited
to. It's pretty good.
It's so good.
It's really good.
I want to experience it in the theater. Like, I want to watch whatever the opening scene, and I want it to just hit me.
Smart man.
With the visuals, yes. So I've not spoiled myself, but I'm a fan of the Billie Eilish. So that, you know, that could compete with Skyfall. We'll see. We're leading up to it. But yeah, clearly, compared to You Know My Name, like, I think, again, I'm going to say it, You Know My Name, it's a little safe for how great that movie and how bold of a turn tonally and artistically that movie is. You Know My Name feels just a little, again, I don't want to say safe, but it feels safe. And maybe that's why it's working.
Needed at the time. Yeah,
okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Sure. Anyway, so let's move on into our thoughts on Skyfall as a film. Chris, let's start with you revisiting it, going through these Bonds one at a time. In the Craig Bond lineup, how's this stacking up?
Christian, last week I compared Casino Royale to Batman Begins. You know, I was talking about how these films are kind of tied together because of this era in Hollywood in which these franchises were needing to be rebooted in a big way. So to me, if Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace together are the Batman Begins of the Craig era, then Skyfall is absolutely the Dark Knight of this era. And to me, while I love Casino Royale, Skyfall is the James Bond movie that I really enjoy coming back to every single time that I watch it. This is Daniel Craig's Bond in the most Bond film. This is the most Bondy he's been since he first became James Bond. We have him fully involved in his 00 status. We are now getting all the Bond accoutrement. We have Q. We have the DB5 Aston Martin. Is not a spoiler, Brian.
I'm gonna say
Brian is fighting me on this.
That's an end of the movie reveal.
It is, but I was watching with subtitles. Literally, the first time she speaks, it says. So I mean,
I think it was Eve for me because I was watching with subs too. Maybe I just
didn't
catch
it. Did it say Eve?
Did it say Eve? Who's to say?
I'm sorry. I brought attention to
it. I'm bleeping it. I'm bleeping it, Chris.
But that's fine. That's fine. But like I said, we have all the Bond accoutrement. Javier Bardem is playing this wonderful foil to James Bond in this movie. This Joker-esque performance. That's why I think it's so relatable to The Dark Knight. You know, Bond's in this place where the entire film, he is behind our main villain. He, M, and MI6 are trying to catch up for most of the movie to this villain's plan. And I think Javier Bardem chews the scenery so well in every single scene that he's in. This in terms of comparison to both Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace, has some of the most beautiful shots in the entire Daniel Craig run. We have this wonderful shot against this like neon background. There's this really excellent shot where James Bond is entering into Macau. I'm not trying to spoil too much here.
It looks like a Wes Anderson shot.
It does.
There's like some incredible framing happening. Yeah.
But I remember seeing this movie for the first time. I believe Christian and I actually saw this movie together in IMAX and just being absolutely blown away by the visuals in this film. So yeah, if it isn't apparent.
Roger Deakins. So Sam Mendes directed, Roger Deakins, the great Roger Deakins behind the camera, and it shows.
It's a beautiful movie. And yeah, I fucking love this movie. How do you guys feel about it?
Brian.
So yeah, I'll pick up there. Yeah, it's debatably the most beautiful Bond movie, I think, hands down. Rewatching it here, it's just endlessly gorgeous, and all of the places, on-set locations that they're going to, they're making the absolute most of it with not only fully lit shots, but beautiful like sunset stuff as well. You mentioned all the stuff in Macau is gorgeous, but I think it's also probably the sharpest written Bond movie of any movie. It's long, but it never feels slow. Javier Bardem shows up like an hour plus into the movie and just re-injects a whole other movie into the plot. And it's incredible because he's so big and it just works. I think the new Q in the relationship between him and Bond is some of my favorite stuff. It's really funny. Let me shout out Ben Whishaw. Yes, just a perfect young smart ass for Bond to play off of. Also hyper intelligent. Really great. I think to the negatives of it, and maybe what makes it not maybe not on the same level as Casino Royale ultimately for me, is how it tries to justify the necessity of intelligence services through kind of fear-mongering in a weird way. And the justifications they're making have been used to do a lot of really heinous shit and a lot of not justified war that has happened, especially in the U.S. So that didn't sit incredibly well with me. But to the movie's credit, all of our characters clearly are flawed and are imperfect, even if they don't necessarily personally reckon with their decisions. We do see the consequences of them. So, but yeah, I think it's one thing that made me pause from saying this is the greatest Bond movie of all time. But yeah, overall, it's incredible, and I will be coming back to this movie many times. It's all the action's incredible. And like I said, the most beautiful and probably the best written of any Bond movie for me.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
So I'm rewatching this movie, and everything you say to a certain extent is correct. It is gorgeous. I actually had the thought halfway through this movie, this is beyond The Dark Knight Rises. This is The Last Jedi of Bond films. I'm like, this is from a cinematography point. It's quiet. Like, there are moments when Bond and any other character aren't speaking, and we're just with Bond as he's creeping through. There's a scene where he's like up in the Hong Kong skyrise, and it's just like all the
reflections happening
through.
Yeah, it's so well shot,
and it's quiet and it's creeping. The shot going into Macau. There's one pretty ugly shot with helicopters and that one town that's evacuated that I'm not even going to, you know what, I have problems with.
Oh, that reveal shot? Okay, yeah, no, that's a fair point.
It's goofy. It looks like they were like, oh shit, we forgot to make that. But other than that, it's a gorgeous film. And I really like first part of second act and even third act when it becomes essentially Home Alone, the Bond movie.
I was going to bring this up.
I was thinking the same exact thing.
And I love the arc of it. And I think conceptually it's perfect. And it's so close to being better than Casino Royale because I think it's more gorgeous. I think it's tighter written. There is some wacky doodle tech hackamadoo nonsense that happens in the second act that made me hate this movie.
Bond, like, the Bond figuring something out is one of the most infuriating things in a movie that's so well written. I'm like, why did they do this?
Is so poorly written. It is. So poorly realized. It was so clearly made by a bunch of 50-year-olds that... It made me want to stop the movie. And it's so frustrating because you're watching going, did I forget that this is better than Casino Royale? Did I forget that this is more expertly handled in almost every single way? And then you get to this hackamadoo scene where it's just silly and tropey and dumb, and it almost tanks the entire experience. It recovers. It ends on a great note, debatably, which we'll talk about. And I love, Brian, that your qualms tie in to my qualms, which is this out of touchness thing that they're trying to go for. They ultimately, I do believe, save in some way, but it gets real frustrating. It really does. It gets so nonsensical and dumb out of nowhere for no reason other than, I guess we have to talk about these things, but it is like typical bad Hollywood tech stuff that is really hard to swallow and believe, and you're just ripped out of the movie, and it's just it is so stupid. It is so dumb. It's dumber than dumb. It's actively making the audience dumber who may not understand. I think it's actively doing a disservice into all the thematic points, Brian, that I think you bring up that are real. I think it's a disservice to the audience intelligence, and it really quite ruins a lot of this movie. I think it's near damn perfect until we get into the second act that leads into the third act, that if that was just get a consultant, I don't fucking know. Like, talk to anyone in intelligence and cybersecurity and figure that scene out. It's really infuriating because everything else is so,
so damn good.
We'll have to get everything the spoilers else. So you can pin. I have a guess as to what scene you're talking
you
about.
You have a guess?
Yeah. But to be, well, you know, I say it that way because to be honest, I you know what? We'll wait until spoilers.
We'll get there. We'll
so
get there.
I think you're being overly critical. That's my opinion.
It honestly ripped me out of the movie and made it all very dumb. And it removed all the logic and removed all the stakes. And it takes such a great villain and then it makes up very convenient stuff. It's just frustrating, and it takes me out of the intensity of the scene. It's very frustrating. Other than that, we get a great relationship developing between Bond, M, and our villain.
Yes.
It's really awesome. I speak highly in every single way that you both did. Like, I really do like this movie a lot. I like it even more on this revisit, and that's a theme going throughout. Loved Casino Royale. Love it even more. Quantum of Solace, thought was trash. Not that bad. Has obvious problems.
I want to say, you shouted out that your favorite scene from Quantum, that mm-hmm. made the movie for me too. The Bond in sure. the opera scene, yep. absolutely phenomenal stuff. So just a quick shout out to that.
I'm glad you enjoyed that as well. Yeah, I think that's great. And this movie is pretty much just like that level of intelligence with all the framing of the shots and scenes and where we put our character. I love where Bond is in this film. It's so brave. It like continues to develop on, as much as I think this film actually seems to be the most standalone. Like, you could just watch, and I think that's why I enjoyed it quite a bit when I saw it, because it kind of just stands alone as its own. Like, it has a A to B arc for Bond. I think supplemental viewing helps, but I do think that where they put Bond is super interesting from the get.
There are some character moments. I was really interested in you guys talking about the alcoholism, because I think this movie kind of directly addresses mm-hmm. the heavy drinking sure. that's happened in a way that just seems really real and almost mm-hmm. out of nowhere within the context of historical Bond.
Yeah.
For sure. I think all that stuff is working. I think the supplementary helps, but it's not required. I think it stands alone just a Bond. I love where they put him in not a perfect place. Like, he's not in a super solid place, and that makes it a very interesting story to watch him try to recover, and especially in that first kind of showdown, that first time when he meets Javier Bardem. It's just very enjoyable. This movie is 90% working. There's this 10% part that is just get a fucking consultant and figure your shit out, because this stuff is dumb as fuck. It's so dumb. I can't state it enough. Super dumb. Can't wait to get into spoilers, which we're going to do now. So that's it for non-spoilers. Did you want to say anything before we go into spoilers, gentlemen? Clearly, you weren't bothered as much by the 10% of lunacy.
Absolutely not. No.
I have a
I think it's because
note.
I'm so... Look, I'm accustomed to Hollywood tech fantasy bullshit.
We watched Johnny Mnemonic, so
right, and it but just that is, doesn't.
That is
I don't expect that out of
in 100% tech bullshit. So it tonally,
yeah, it's consistent.
This
at least
puts us
right.
in a real spot, and it like look, you get no. I want to. I'll wait. But Chris, did you want to finish your point?
Play the bumper.
Sorry, Chris.
Play the bumper.
So I'm actually really interested, before you begin your rant, Christian, I'm actually interested in hearing something from Brian. When he was talking about his non-spoiler thoughts, you seem to think that it was like kind of egregious that Bond solves the puzzle. Why is that?
It just didn't make any sense. So it's like they're looking at this big abstract collection of data, presumably, and he's right. like... Run that back. As if he's looking like DNA code or something. And then he recognizes a London stop. He's like, try that as the key. And it's like, what the fuck is he even talking about? Now, is this the scene you're talking about?
On the side of the screen, you have all this data and like different, I'm assuming different passwords or information that he's looking at. There's no rhyme or reason to what it is. But he sees the letters that spell out Granborough.
No, I understand that. The fact that cracks the code in some way makes no sense, and they ultimately find a map that's irrelevant because they just got hacked, so it was kind of just a red herring anyway, I think.
I mean, I think that's the point, though. I think Silva has developed a seemingly useless and pointless puzzle to distract them while his main plan is going on. So
yeah,
I think
that
absurdity of the puzzle and how ridiculous it looks is on purpose because Silva wants to waste their time and wants to distract them from his escape. So I don't know. It just doesn't rub me the wrong way in any way. And maybe I'm getting too aggressive about pushing back on this, but Christian came in pretty hot and heavy with how emotional he is about this.
Let's make sure, is this the scene you are talking about, Christian?
So let's take Bond, for example. He's a secret agent who uses guns and has to use spy techniques and has to use
sleight of hand,
the quick wit, the outsmarting his opponents. And he has to handle firearms. And I think for anybody who has any understanding of firearms, if like we were like James Bond, he's the most badass secret agent. He works for a high-end intelligent thing. And he came out, and we're not doing this on video, but he came out and he was like, he held his gun and it was like floppy. And he like was walking around letting it wobble and was constantly like talking to M and was pointing his gun at M's head. You would be like, what the fuck is this dude doing? And the movie's trying to sell us that he is this badass secret agent of complete coy and mystery and also can handle a gun and is super relevant. You know, all this stuff that lets you know that the character is a very capable, like commando-esque, gun-wielding, mm-hmm. savvy person. And he was just flopping his gun around in people's faces and he goes, yeah, Q. And he would point his gun and put in his mouth a little bit and be like, I'm sorry. It'd be naked gun levels of ridiculous that you'd be like, okay, I'm sorry. I was just taken out of this movie because he's supposed to be like very competent and he's shoving his gun in people's mouths and like pointing it at them and flopping it around. No one would hold a gun that way. I just didn't believe that he was a secret agent. Okay. So there's this really brilliant idea of comparing Bond, the old dog, to Q, the new up and comer. We can solve everything with tech, which is really dope. Like put this old school secret agent, hands on boots on the ground against tech. And you've got this old school boots on the ground counterpoint who also learned tech and hacking and Javier Bardem. And it's a great juxtaposition. I love what's happening. And then the thing that occurs is that they get a laptop and they plug it, I guess, into the intranet of their entire MI6.
Just so basic operational security practices that are...
The fucking floppy gun, right. Put it up people's buttholes bullshit of like, well, that's just really stupid. So MI6 automatically, if you have any basic level of cybersecurity, go, well, that's putting your gun up M's fucking mouth with the safety off, dumb levels of shit that pulls you out of it. And then what happens? He goes, it's a spiral hexagonic neck of code, and you're like, that's not how fucking code or encryption works. What is happening right now? And then there's actually legitimate, what's on the side there to give you some reference is hash, which is the 8-bit like alphanumeric code that makes up binary like functions and shit. Like it's actually raw encrypted code, but you wouldn't fucking hide a word in hex code. Like you, so the whole thing just screams, we don't fucking care if you know anything about this. We're gonna have fucking Q, the smart ass person, play with some bullshit fucking 3-dimensional jigsaw puzzle while you're going like, oh, well, he's just going to hack and outsmart. Like, you just know what's happening. And it's so fucking stupid and demeaning to the intelligence of the audience that you're like, why? You thought of everything. And now you're playing
with
bullshit.
I think that's a little intense. I'm just going to flat out tell you right now, I think 95% of people don't give a fuck about that scene in the way that you're describing it right now.
It's going to age like a goddamn brick. And it's
so is everything else related to technology in film.
No, there's a
way
that
you can do it. It's the nature of technology.
It shows a lack of giving a shit. And it also, I think, is just like bad information for people. Like to your point about like the purposefulness of like what is espionage, right? And like defending espionage, it is going, oh, we actually don't care about this. And I think I'm trying to give it a comparison to a lot of things that people are critical of that I think most eyes can see because we've seen good, effective partnering with people with military experience deliver really, like, look at John Wick. He goes through training where he trains in that, and it sells the audience so well. When we talk about CG, and I have complaints about CG, it's because are we, like, doing a good job of being inventive and tricking the human eye into believing what's possible and taking us to a place? And to be so egregious about one part and just not giving a fuck about anything that matters, then it's all fantasy. It's all bullshit. And it ripped me out of the film. And it's really frustrating that it doesn't even follow logic. Like, it doesn't follow the fundamental simple things that you could do to make a scenario tense. Like, all the same things that could happen, like, thematically, it's there. But because the execution tries harder than it needs to be interesting to the audience, and because they think the audience is so fucking stupid that they wouldn't know that this is, like, nothing, like, I think it hurts the film. Like, I really do think it is... It's fucking Hackers. It's Johnny Mnemonic in the middle of a serious espionage film. Like, we talked about Johnny Mnemonic. I had fun because it's goofy, and the whole thing is that bullshit all wrapped in one. This is a serious espionage film that has the
it's
most...
It's not a serious espionage film. Bond rides the edge of fantasy and has always ridden the edge of fantasy. All of his villains are fucking comic book superhero villains for the most part.
These are trying to be... You compare them to the Nolan Batman movies,
which is grounded, I will
right.
agree.
I think they are trying to be a little less fantastical. I'm definitely in the middle of you too, because like I said, Bond solving the thing did kind of take me out of it. I just, my note was literally Bond semi solving the puzzle is bad, or the code puzzle, whatever it is. But to its credit, I think it is in, you know, I don't necessarily agree with this theme of the movie, but there's this idea of Q being this heady all tech thing, and ultimately he as a person gets hacked, and that's kind of what it's trying to say, is like, even with all the levels of tech, there's the human that has to interact with it, and yeah. Javier Bardem successfully does that, right?
I like that about the scene. As I mentioned in non-spoilers, all of our characters are playing catch up this entire movie,
right?
None of them can compare to the intelligence of Silva. He is always 10 steps ahead of them. And even Q, who supposedly, he even mocks Bond a little bit in their first scene together, who's, like you said, Brian, this really heady character, supposed to be like the most intelligent person in the room, gets fucked in this scene. Like, he gets caught off guard. And I think the scene works really well. And the verisimilitude of what's actually transpiring on the screen, I think, isn't as important as you're making it out to be, Christian, because I think the character dynamics that are taking place in the script between Silva, who's off screen doing his A plan, and Bond and Q in the MI6 room is more important to what's happening here. So that's just my opinion. I'm sorry that the scene rubbed you the wrong way, but I think you're focusing on the wrong thing here. And
sure, but it's like in the nature of this spy thing, when they got into hand-to-hand combat, it is like James Bond kept leading the person into stepping on a series of rakes that were larger and larger. And if I said, I thought that was a bit goofy that during their hand-to-hand combat fight, like, they kept stepping on a series of rakes that got larger and larger, comically so, you'd be like, it kind of took me out of the film. I think...
How are those things like, comparable?
It's the if we watched an action scene in which James Bond is like trying to fight people, it's like every time James Bond got in a pinch, he kept ricocheting bullets into people's head, and he kept like flipping it around his finger like Western style, blowing smoke out, and then shooting it, being like bing bing bing, and it just kept flying around and just kept perfectly ricocheting. You'd be like, well, the tensity and level of reality was really dropped in that moment. I think anybody who's ever used a goddamn computer would be like, this is all very stupid. And you're right. I agree. And what I'm saying, what is more of the letdown is how good this is and how much the thematics are working. And mechanically, they felt the need to do this so that we wouldn't be bored if you actually tried to make anything that resembled reality. Like, if you've seen Mr. Robot, you can make realistic hacking interesting. And then to just bullshit your way through it to some... Again, I think it's just a cop-out. And I think it's egregious because it doesn't do a good job of educating people on cybersecurity. And I know this is like such a weird off-tangent
for this
film.
Clearly not the
intention
of Bond movies, though. And Mr. Robot was acclaimed because it was the first show to do that, right? So
I know, which is insane. And to mystify it, it just feels like we're not letting... It feels like you're gating this... It just feels dirty.
Let me say this.
Silly,
and maybe I'm taking this whole thing way too personally. But I myself use a computer every day. I myself worked in the same tech industry as you for 5 years, and I give zero fucks about this scene. It doesn't matter to me how true to life this stupid hacking simulation is. That's not the point of what the scene's trying to do. And I don't consider myself a stupid individual. So would I think you're being a little harsh.
Would you say the scene was trying to convince me that Javier Bardem, Master Hacker, was outsmarting Q? That's the goal of the scene.
Correct.
Right. And I have no idea what's actually happening. I don't know why he has a floating hexagon of lines and why that has any relationship
so,
to
what if,
computer
what if
programming.
It is, so let me say this, and I already said this, but what if this whole thing is supposed to be exactly what you're reading it as? Javier Bardem Silva has created some bullshit graphic for them to mess around with for 30 minutes while he does what he needs to do. You know, like I said, this isn't... It's supposed to be a distraction. It's not supposed to help them in any capacity.
And then unlock a map in which they keep using the map that they
for
unlocked.
No
to
reason.
Track. They use the same map that got unlocked in the hack to like track London. Like they're still trusting that it's a real map. Like, what is happening in this fucking scene? What is fucking happening?
That is very silly. I think they do continue using that map.
They do. You are right. I will use
but
my words.
To Chris's point, I think the point was just to get connected to their intranet, right? Sure. And to kind of allow them to be connected long enough for him to successfully hack it, whatever the yes. program was. But I think you guys yeah. both have valid points, and we should probably continue.
Mom and Dad, please don't fight.
No, we'll end this because I really have made my point very clear, I think, to the audience and to you, Chris. I don't mean to insult you personally. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Like, I wish I could look past it because I do enjoy this film otherwise. I'm not trying to say that
Loyal
you're
listeners,
dumb.
Email us at papahawkscast@gmail.com. How do you feel about this scene in Skyfall? We're very interested to know.
But moving on, we definitely want to move past that. I think that addresses our concerns. We can continue enjoying the film. Again, there was I was not able to enjoy the train scene as much, but then we're getting better, and then he goes away to Home Alone style shit, and it thematically ends on a very good note. Overall, definitely like competitive with Casino Royale. Just goddamn, that scene made me very upset in so many ways. Anyway, so let's reset here, Chris. You know, take a breath. It's fine. I enjoyed the film overall. What are some of your favorite moments of Skyfall?
You know, again, just like with Casino Royale, I think this...
I want to talk about this hacking scene. So intense.
Love this fucking hacking scene. What if that was the case? What would you feel like, Kristen, if I was like, my favorite moment in this whole movie was the scene where Q got bamboozled by this ridiculous hacking graphic?
So realistic. Incredible.
I myself have fucked around with hexagonical virtual code, and it's a bitch. Mostly because it's so hard to crack because it's not normal. It's actually was invented for this film, so it makes it very difficult. Anyway.
I really like the opening sequence of this film. I think even more so than the opening sequence, the opening action sequence. Let me be clear, because I made that error last week. But the opening action sequence of Casino Royale. Everything on the motorcycles, when they're fighting on top of the train, Bond using the Earth Mover to try and latch on to the next train cart. Like,
just the most
there was a moment.
Male power so fantasy. I need a big cat power tool to help me out here. Incredible.
Talking about moments that took me out of the movie, Bond getting into the Earth Mover with this giant windshield and this guy shooting bullets at him and him just being like, it'll be okay.
Bulletproof.
It's going to be fine when I finally... When I finally turn around and my windshield is facing this man firing at me, and
he
gets shot,
right
in the shoulder.
Which is nice. It was just like, I think that brings it to a level of reality of like, there's no way he's not getting shot. Oh, he did. Okay, he got shot.
Right. And exactly. Then he ends up using the thing to block the bullets after that, right? Using
exactly.
He's got that mini pistol with the extended clip, and you're like, the clip is like three times the size of the gun. And you're like, if he's shooting endlessly, again, to the reality of the film, if you're shooting 800 bullets out of a pistol, you better have a giant extended clip. And, you know, they logic their way out of it. So that's nice.
I love Javier Bardem's opening monologue when Bond's tied to the chair and Javier Bardem's entering the room. And we have this great shot of him walking from the elevator to Bond talking about this island that his grandmother used to own and how it was infested with rats and what they did to get rid of the rats. And then relating the two surviving rats to both he and Bond being these two surviving agents within MI6 that M has kind of essentially taken under her wing. It's just such an excellent, you know... Like I mentioned earlier, he just really chews the fat in all the scenes that he's in, really chews the scenery. And it's just a wonderful introduction to this really eccentric character that he's playing.
I wanna shout out before you get off that scene, Chris, because I totally agree. It's an amazing introduction. And the visuals is actually a call out. The movie starts with kind of a Bond at the end of a long hallway blurred. And Bardem is introduced in the exact same way coming down. So another True. Like tie visually that ties them together there. Just incredible.
It's great.
One point we find this cathedral is where he's storing his server room, which is in an unventilated, unair conditioned area.
Here we go.
Which two Here giant pane glasses of sunlight shine on his server racks. Frying
they should
them.
Have he shown the portable AC unit here, keeping these things mm-hmm. cool, and this would have just totally sold Christian on the movie.
Yeah.
See, this is where I'm going to draw a difference. I go, now that's some deep nerd shit of like, these server racks would overheat. It didn't, other than they CG duplicate them, which is very obvious. So it ruins some of the beautiful moments of it. Like, it doesn't look great because I don't think they built those, but that's fine. They're in a terrible spot. They would overheat. They're in an uncirculated area. Not a good place. He's not a very good hardware. He's not a good steward of his hardware. That shit's frying very soon. Clearly. But again, you know, he didn't plan to stay there very long. So maybe he was only running these servers for a few moments. So anyway, that's a nitpick on the tech that doesn't ruin the movie. And I'm not bothered as much. But I did want to point it out
comment.
Just to prove a point of how there's a difference of like,
okay,
visually it looks good, doesn't make any sense, very bad placement of the server racks, but fine, we let this slide.
It's so good the way he's acting in that whole scene.
And this is coming off No Country for Old Men, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
just so, killing
two
it.
Bangers. Oof.
And I'll leave it at that because I don't want to take up all the other scenes. So, Brian, what were some of your favorite moments in the movie?
Okay, I have a few. Yeah, the first action scene is shouted out as well. The motorcycles over the roof, just all incredible. The Moneypenny shaving scene, my goodness, sparks absolutely flying there. And amazing way to build up to the reveal of her being Moneypenny, having seen...
But what I love about that relationship is that they never... have sex.
I don't think
kiss,
so. But they she was sitting on his lap. There was heavy sexual tension
yes,
there.
It was very sexual, without a doubt.
And yeah, basically the whole idea of putting his life in her hands after she shot him as well. Just really, really awesome stuff thematically happening there, I think. The word association test, I think, is up there in my favorite Bond moments. Getting to I can't remember if it's killing or murder, and his response is employment. And mm-hmm. just some of the answers he gives, they're so sharp and incredible and telling for who Bond is.
I think it harkens back to what Christian was talking about last week with Bond's introductory scene with Vesper, where you really have to kind of pay attention to what he's
saying.
Oh, that
battle of the minds that's happening. Right, entirely. Yeah, yeah, 100%. Javier Bardem, it's... can't shout him out enough, but the hydrogen cyanide scene where his deformity is revealed and that cyanide pill not killing him, just horrifying, atrocious body horror stuff. That's also, it's interesting because Chris Nolan does something similar with a cyanide pill in Tenet that I won't get into, but it was a really interesting take on the lengths that Bardem will go to hold his secrets and how it at every turn goes against him, and he's just been cut off. Really, really powerful, and humanizes him as a villain to a real good degree. Aside from that, the humor. So just a couple humor moments when, oh man, I'm going to blank on her name. Is it Severin? Severine?
Yeah.
Bernice Merlot. Mm-hmm. When she asks, can you kill him? And Bond says, someone usually dies. Like, that is an incredible, incredible Bond line. As well as when he hops onto the back of the train and the casual bystander is just like, he's keen to get home. Just love little like throwaway lines like this that just keep things moving. And there's constant witty banter like that throughout the whole movie that I just really love.
While we're on the topic of witty banter, though, which I also love about the movie, I do want to point out a particularly egregious scene, in my opinion. Right after Severine is killed, Bond goes, something like "What a waste of whiskey," or like,
"Oh, so
oh
good." It's so good.
So there are Christian and I talked about last week about the womanizing aspects of James Bond and how, you know, they're inappropriate and they don't really mesh well with the current state of society. But it's this like, I really hate to say this, this like quintessential element of who James Bond is, you know? And that scene when Severine is shot, and then the scene where he just randomly comes up behind her in the shower on the boat. Both my wife and I were watching the movie and we were like, this is so incredibly inappropriate. I can't even.
Yeah,
can't
showing
even tell
up in
right
the shower
now.
Was very rapey. Like,
absolutely.
She
out
clearly
of, out
once
of the
he was
shadows.
There, yeah, once he was there, she seemed to consent, but showing up somewhere naked, unannounced, is not okay ever, I think.
I
especially
unless
if you don't know the person.
Totally is. Unless it totally is. Well, I think the movie telegraphs that, well, no, it's true. It's, you know, if it's okay, then it's definitely okay and it's very hot. You know, she had two, if you look at her waiting on the boat, she has two champagne glasses.
She was waiting
with
for
the champagne.
Him, for sure.
No, she was definitely she was waiting for him and she even invited him, you know, like when they were in the casino, she said, if you survive, I'm going to be on this boat and we're departing at this time, you know, so she was expecting him, but even still.
I want to differentiate this from the barn scene that we get in much earlier Bonds of like a woman clearly saying, please don't do this.
Right.
It's obviously very sexual and very stylized and stuff. And I get that. I'm not going to fight back on that. There is no, the intent of making this had no intent of the woman going, please get out of the shower right now. But how interesting would that have been if she put her hands up and was like, please get out. And he's like, yep, absolutely. Yep. I just read this wrong. I saw two champagne glasses. I thought we were on a different page.
Oh, you were just giving me a ride. Not in that way. Okay. I see now.
I to defend the film in a bit on the what a waste of whiskey is that like there is this fighting that Bond has to have of like it's a means to an end, and I'm actually there's a level of actually I use my sexuality to accomplish the mission, and it's not pretty, but like I have to have this detached face, which he's fighting with, which he kind of gets this edge from the first Casino Royale of like, no, I don't attach myself for this, it's just purely the mission. Which kind of, you know, I don't know if justifies the right word, but it's definitely how Bond sees it, who is a flawed person. I don't think the movie tries to, like, make it anything more than he's flawed. Like, obviously, there's the, you know, cool parts about it, but...
He's also trying to save face in front of Silva, I think. He's, like, not...
Yeah,
not
I mean, immediately that line that Silva even goes, ooh, that's a bit hard. And then in that moment that everybody's going, like, well, fuck Bond, he utilizes
as a distraction.
It. So, again, a means to an end.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. But it just it ties back and reinforces that Bond is like this horrible, horrible womanizer for the most part, and like has a low opinion of women.
Yeah, no, I think you guys have pretty much said it. I think it was interesting to me how dark it got. It was maybe problematic in terms of tropiness, but him identifying her as like a former child sex slave. And almost using that information to continue getting closer, mm-hmm. and then her dying. Yeah. I did, similarly to you, Christian, take that whiskey line as being him putting a face on for Silva to some degree. But yeah, it does seem a little bit like, oh, we got to make her the damsel victim who's quickly thrown away and disposed of. I think it is playing into some problematic tropes there, probably.
For sure. I think even more so tonally shifting, like I think that fits within the scene and the means to the end that he's trying to do, and there's probably
and his alcoholism
many a glass of whiskey that he throws back to like cover that up and kind of like
get rid of the shakes that
try to
seen him he has
yeah destroy it, it there is a I think more egregiously thematically is the ending of the movie in which he just completely goes like, I guess it's time for another mission, right? That's the, like the moment in the movie where it's like, okay, we're losing me thematically with like the feeling of this. And I get what they're trying to do. You got to get people excited about the next Bond. Like, I'm sure that's the debate between like the producers being like, no, we want to show James Bond as a human. And like, what does it look like to do this? And it's like, but we also need to sell another movie that's coming out.
I did point out to Mickey, though, in that third act, after M dies, we rarely get to see Bond cry. And there is an excellent moment between him and M when he's holding her lifeless body and you see him cry. It's a fantastic moment, especially considering the dynamic between the two of them over the course of these three films. Like, we see a very dysfunctional relationship between her and Silva, this you know, mother complex that he has. But in reality, M is kind of a mother to James Bond as well, in a maybe not a healthier way, but a different way than her relationship was.
Certainly not a healthier way. Yeah, and but that's what I'm saying, is that's so impactful. And then the movie, because it needs to be like, but James Bond is still James Bond.
Right.
It like has to like immediately about face and be like, well, on to the next one, James.
So it did.
He's dealt with her death. He's received the tacky dog. He's ready to move on.
I think they did a decent job of him coming around on Mallory, though, because I think that's part of what needs to be sold for him to come back, right? As the new M, we see Mallory kind of prove himself in Bond's eyes to some degree.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I just think the movie doesn't want to end on Bond crying, because Bond doesn't cry, right? And I do appreciate that they went there, and I think it's a good arc. I think it's definitely a reward of enjoying all the Craig Bond movies, and certainly the most consequential episodic type of Bond story that we can see. I think all that stuff's working. I love the dynamics between, I had mentioned earlier in the non-spoilers, but we get Bond who's like struggling, like really bad and not in the peak Bond shape and really having to fight. And to my point about, we were talking about kung fu movies, I'm like, these movies, you need to like, the hero needs to bleed. Mm-hmm. And like this movie starts out with the hero gushing blood and just not in, and so that makes all the times when he's trying to be Bond way more tense, because we're like, he isn't ready for this, and it carries us through that entire film.
Definitely.
And I love that the film puts us there, and I think that's really, really crucial to us like rooting and being scared for him. There's that great scene where he jumps on the elevator and he can barely hold on. Ooh. And you're like, oh my goodness, this is not good. And he just looks gruffer, right? They give him the facial hair, and he's having to kind of clean himself up and get his footing back while dealing with this relationship. And you really, something I think we haven't talked about that I think sells the love triangle of Javier Bardem, M, and James is this idea, like right before this bullshit hacking thing that happens that really pissed me off, is that James Bond is like looking at M like, yeah, I don't really trust you. Like, I see what you've done. And there's like, Bond is actually being convinced and Javier is almost won. And there's this like really just duty to obviously country and duty to M that he kind of hunkers down on and tries to protect her.
Does he say mommy's behaved badly or something? Bardem's,
that's what Silva says.
Yeah, and you're, as an audience member, you're like, yeah, this doesn't seem cool, right? And I think all that's really well done. So that's probably my favorite element of the film. But hey, we have to talk about Home Alone scene. Just so,
my God,
great up.
I literally wrote,
stakes.
Are they home aloning his childhood home?
Yes.
And
you know
they
what?
They literally are.
I fucking love it.
It was pretty awesome. I'm not going to lie.
I really like getting to go back to Bond's old estate. You know, we don't see this very often, his past, you know, because at least before the Craig era, they didn't want to show any type of cracks in his persona. Like, he was supposed to be peak masculinity. But And some people don't like this about the Craig era, that he does kind of not want to be James Bond, not want to be 007 all the time. You know, he's kind of a sadder Bond. But I really dig it, and I like getting this backstory and learning a little bit more about his troubled childhood and how he came to be 007.
Maybe one of the darkest lines in a Bond movie, orphans always make the best recruits. Just like, my God, Em, that is pretty dark.
Yeah, it reminds me of, obviously, we get a little bit of this in like Black Widow and her storyline through the MCU.
Right.
And I actually find a similarity between The Spy, which is the Netflix series with Sacha Baron Cohen about the Israeli spy. Like, there's a lot of similarities between that. And I definitely appreciate, like, I think just think it makes a more interesting character of, like, if you had the license to kill and you were trying to do all this stuff, like, you fucked up. Like, you're fucked up in the sense of comparing you to normal people, because in order, and they have lines about this and everything, in order to like be in this world, you have to be detached. And it's
Kincaid
this
has
price.
A great line where he's like, what is your profession again? Like, what do you do for work again?
Yeah. It's so perfect.
Oh, I did want to shout out at the beginning of this film. Him taking the shot with the scorpion on his hand is so awesome. Like, such a great place to put us. Mm. And in like, that like he's chasing the highs that he had as a secret agent of this like risk of death and this admiration from peers. And it cuts completely back to an empty bar and he's just sat and like hungover and drunk. And you're like, oh yeah, that's perfectly visualizing the dichotomy of what he's chasing and what it has resulted in.
Yeah.
And I love that that repeats. And again, to the strength of the film, I think it's the most visually arresting like way that we have presented James Bond. So definitely higher on my list than I even remembered. So good to watch. These are my final thoughts. It's just pretty much an awesome film all around. I really, really enjoyed it. That goddamn hacking scene's stupid as fuck. And we should shit on it more because it sucks. And it's just really bad. It's really bad. I'm sorry, Chris.
It's your opinion. It's your opinion.
No, it's not my opinion. Talk to anybody that knows anything about computers who cares about that being represented. Well, I want... represent the drama and the engineering task of hacking and cybersecurity and make that interesting and make us learn something and make it cool. Like, you can dramatize it to a bit. Certainly gunplay is in history. Certainly all these things have a little bit of exaggeration to them in all aspects. The sexuality of Bond, exaggerated. The gunplay of Bond, exaggerated. The hacking of Bond makes no fucking sense and is really stupid. So just give it that little je ne sais quoi, as we say.
Look,
and
if there's anything we've learned from these Bond movies so far...
Hacking is hard.
No. Well, yes, acting is hard, but the key...
Hacking
is hard, yes.
Hacking is hard.
The key to any successful espionage is having as many... things that you can shoot that either explode or obscure villains' vision around the house at all times, because these are going to be very clutch when you're being attacked.
No, they are. Definitely. But I feel like we talked about the Deus Ex explodey thing that happened in Casino Royale and the last film, and I feel like this is the raison d'etre of it, because he grabs two big propane tanks and he's like, I know, my friends.
Yes.
I know where my hope is at. And it's an exploding shit. And I felt like it used it a little more. But you got to admit, the fire extinguisher obfuscation is very cool. Like, I think
it's a great idea.
It makes sense. It's sensical. Yeah. There's going to be fire extinguishers there. That's what they do probably when you shoot them. Or if it's 9mm, you know, honestly, the bullets might just bounce off the metal. You know, I can suspend my disbelief a little bit, because that's actually what's it. You know what? Imagine if he shot the fire extinguisher and funfetti came out. You'd be like, that's not what's in there. I know a few things about fire extinguishers, and I know that confetti is not packed in the fire extinguishers. I call bullshit on this film.
Too
it's
extreme.
Kind of ruined the scene for me. Anyway.
I want to shout out one final thing on the drinking. So in Casino Royale, we got the amazing, do I look like I give a damn about the shaken or stirred? In this one, it's... The joke is just implied. There's a martini glass. There's the bartender shaking. And Bond just says, perfect. And it was one of these moments that's just like absolutely excellent. Flawless in its execution.
And we know he ordered a Vesper. Like, he gave him the custom drink. That's
it's all implied.
Drinking.
Yeah, it's so perfect. Yeah. Great callback. Really
I appreciate really, that a lot. Really how they don't have to say it in every single movie. Shaken, not stirred. Like,
right.
That line gets... it's too much. I'm glad that they decided to go with a more subtle way of keeping it in the franchise.
Right.
I really appreciate things that are done subtly, Chris. And I think this is a good...
I can tell.
This is a good example of how you can do things subtly. And, you know, I believed that there was drinks. You know, they used the Foley work to make me believe that there was ice in there. There probably wasn't ice in there. You know, it's a set. It's Hollywood. There's some movie magic happening. But I believe that he was drinking a Vesper.
I'm glad it didn't take you out of the movie, Christian.
Not at all. No, completely believe it. Didn't even think twice about it.
Ryan, welcome back.
Oh, it's so great to be back, guys. This has been amazing. I can't wait to finish this month out.
We're all like so excited about this film. And you're like, Christian is going to go on a 15-minute rant on cybersecurity.
Hey, this is what makes things interesting.
Absolutely.
Don't worry, I've got, you know, the Popaholics have an enemy. You know, we know we have it. It's C4S villains. They're our arch nemesis and also our best friends.
Keep your friends close and your enemies closer, as they say, I guess.
Absolutely. And they gave me, I've recovered a USB stick that they gave me that they said, it has a skull and crossbones on it. What I'm going to do is I have the Popaholics backups here. And I'm just going to plug it right into the old server room and just see what happens, because I want to try to figure out their deep and dark secrets. So I'm going to plug it directly into our backups.
This is the C4S Trojan horse, I believe.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's got a skull and crossbones, so clearly it's got devious purposes. But what I think I can do is I think I can plug this directly into our central server, and I think I can get down to the bottom of this.
I'm gonna point out a detail of the film that probably is not going to work in my favor, but it's probably actually working more in Christian's favor. The first time Silva hacks into MI6,
oh God,
they intentionally drop the firewall to track him. So with that information, knowing that they supposedly have like a really impenetrable firewall, I would assume that the moment that Q plugs that laptop into their intranet, he's also thinking that their firewall is pretty impenetrable. And he's not going to make the mistake of intentionally dropping the firewall and letting Silva directly in. I'm just going to leave that there. You know?
Okay. I have another thing, and this is literally like, okay. No, I do think there's responsibility to good education. M is on her, like, all the shit with the pop-ups is silly. But again, movie magic. I'm actually not that mad. I am mad about a scene in which M is on her secret MI6 laptop and she gets a pop-up and it's like a
and she clicks
wheel.
It.
Yes.
And it says click here. And I was like, the one thing that even entry-level fuckers learn is like any email you get that says click on this, like if you don't recognize the sender, don't click on it. And M's like, yeah, fuck it.
Like, hold on. I'm going to say something
the
terrible
best,
right now.
Okay, go ahead.
I think it's pretty in line with M's
Chris
demographic.
Is sold. Oh, wow. She's just old. So Chris is pro M's retirement here.
I'm just saying.
Kick her out the door.
The older generation is prone to trust a little bit more, I guess.
Did you guys notice that?
Given Javier Bardem's, she's given him her social security, even though I don't know if they have that in Britain, but she's given her the driver or telly license. I don't know. Fuck. I don't know anything about British stuff, but she's given him secret British shit.
See,
over the phone.
That was because
he's like, I'm tech support.
I need you to go to Target support. And buy 100 Google Play cards.
And M's like, okay, it sounds suspicious, but right away. Javier Bardem's like, yes, this is MI6 security, and I need all your passwords because we had a boot and the mainframe was lagging, and we had to reboot it, so I need all your passwords. It's like, I would love the cut to Family Guy style flashback of Javier Bardem, like, you want to know how I hacked MI6? And it just flashes back. This is MI6 tech support. M's just giving it all up.
All right, enough bashing.
I have to say, on that scene, it was pretty inspired that she clicked on that. This is when there was this first reveal of the five operatives that were burned, right? They were outed. It's posted on YouTube. So they took this opportunity to do a YouTube ad on top of everything else. I was like, oh, this hyper secure or hyper intelligent hacker just posted his goods to YouTube. It's like, of course he would. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Honestly, I
not
think
the
it
most
does,
egregious
you,
part of it.
I think it does make sense in the context that Silva is just openly putting these people's identities out there.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
no.
I mean, YouTube is the most accessible platform in 2012. So he's like, I want their identities to be out there. Anybody can find this.
And this
like,
is an expensive
whatever.
Movie. They need all the ad revenue they can get. So it's understandable.
Yeah. What's he going to put it on? What's that other player that he could use? It's going on E-Bombs World. Going on Vivio.
That's even a little outdated for
2012. I wanted it in 1080p. I wanted it in 4K, so I put it on Vivio. It is a much better client, I think, Mr. Bond.
We've gone entirely off the rails here.
We have, yeah.
They use an advanced compression algorithm that lets the scene really shine. Look at my face when I take my dentures out. I'm ugly!
Look at what you've made, mother.
Yo, when he at the ending scene, when he puts the gun to her head through his, like, yo, soul in that villain. I was like, oh, this person was just like, this is all I care about anymore. I've got issues. I've got mommy issues out my fucking asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way he looks at her when he realizes that she's injured, even though he has like a killer intent.
Yeah. And then not the gunshot.
He's genuinely upset that she's been hurt, even though moments later he's going to kill both of them.
Yeah. He just wants to end it all. I love that it didn't end with a gunshot either. I love that Bond literally threw a knife.
It was set up very well, too, with the sometimes the old ways are better, you know, in terms of, you know, the movie's going for him.
It's good. The movie is 90% perfect and 10% stupid as fuck. So that is Skyfall. We all enjoyed it, despite all these things and being just ripped horrifically out of the movie at one point. I really enjoyed the film. Chris, we're on the same page for most of it. I think it's really good. It rivals Casino Royale. It really does. You know, Casino Royale is just missing a fucking graphical hacking scene.
What did you call it originally? Hack-a-ma-doo?
Hack-a-ma-fucking stupid fuck shit. Dumb. I hate it. It's so dumb. It's got... I'm gonna scour... some YouTube videos tonight, and I'm gonna send you like some like real hacker that's like probably
that.
Shitting on this film.
So
I'm gonna find
do.
It. I already know. I'm like, So we talk about triggering content. This triggered me. It triggered me pretty hard.
I can tell.
Chris, what are we covering next week?
Christian, next week we're trucking along with our No Time to Pod month, and we're gonna be watching Spectre, another potentially polarizing Bond film. I haven't seen it since you and I originally saw it in theaters, so this rewatch is going to be interesting.
I gotta say.
I remember hating it as much as Quantum Solace. So,
oh, wow.
We'll see. Hopefully I'll be more hot on it, but it is the most recent one I've seen, and I remember not loving it. Brian.
I want to say it now. I'll try and remind you guys throughout the week as well, but there is a Radiohead song that was rejected, that was made for this movie and rejected, that I do want to talk about. No hate on Sam Smith. Also a solid track, but I do want to... You guys
I
to listen to
that
so we can talk about that next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, I'm a Stan Smith for Radiohead. You know what I mean?
Excellent.
Great.
Gentlemen, where can people find more of your work on the internet?
Loyal listeners, you can find me on Twitter talking about all things nerdy at Chris Conkling.
And you can find me on Twitter at True Popaholic.
And you can find my band at Midnight Satire. As of this recording's posting, Positive NDA is live. Please check it out. It's an indie banger. It's going to be cool. So Midnight Satire. Look for it on all social media. It's probably an advertisement for it playing right now, like right before and after this episode. Sorry. So that's cool. You can check out more from the Popaholics by following our link tree in the show notes, subscribing on YouTube. Really appreciate that. We're trying to get 100 subs so we can actually get our own URL, which will be really cool. So we appreciate all that support. Rate us on Apple Podcast. We have 24 five-star reviews. Please be the 25th and write a review. We'd love to hear from you there. Email us at popboxcast@gmail.com. And that'll do it for this episode. We're excited to come back talking weekly upload and more James Bond next week on Pod.
That was an entertaining podcasting. I don't know what is.